everybody. Welcome to another episode of Across the Pitch. I am one of your co-hosts, Mike Barrera. Across the pond, we have Dave Miller. Dave, how are you doing tonight?
Yep. I'm very tired, but yeah.
Dave and I are both fairly tired this afternoon and evening. Well, him early in the morning. So, you know, we're going to try to get through this power through like the union are currently doing and see what we can do. So first and foremost, Dave, a couple matches to recap. We have Nashville. We have my brain's ready to fry. We have Toronto that we had last night, which was and I disagreed a bit on that one. So we're going to talk about that one. And we have upcoming up. We have Cincinnati on Halloween night for us here in the States. Dave, do they do Halloween the same over there for you?
Sorry, I was going to say, it's going to obviously do the famous Bill Belichick quote. We move on to Cincinnati. Well, regarding Halloween, we do Halloween, do the trick-or-treating, people do the parties, do like the haunted houses stuff. It's not really a holiday that I really pay attention to or care for personally, but obviously,
I don't blame
people.
As a father, I have no choice but to eat a lot of candy and go trick-or-treating and everything else in between. But first and foremost, like I said, we have very few news and notes. I guess the most significant news is a sad note. Andre Blake was not with the team this past match because of the personal matters revolving his grandmother's passing. So, of course, we send our best wishes to the Blake family, and hopefully everything's okay. I believe he's going to be back this weekend, though. So, fortunately for us, we get to see Andre back. But of course, it's always upsetting to hear family matters of that sort. So anyway, moving on now to the most recent match, recent weekend match, I should say, would be the Nashville win we had against them at Subaru Park. I think going into this match, you were optimistic and so was I. We just kind of had a gut feeling that this was going to go in our favor. And I think if I remember correctly, Dave, did you predict Casper was going to score?
Yeah, I did say Casper was going to score. I sort of felt like with the way he'd been playing in recent games, I thought he was due a goal. And also, I know it came from the penalty spot, but again, it was a well-deserved goal for Casper. And thank God, he obviously scored. So I don't really think the Union, I don't think either team really liked scoring apart from the penalty during that game. It was quite quite a dull game, wasn't it? It was quite a dull game throughout.
Yeah, I would say the Union overall played better. I know the Nashville was missing a couple of players, and I know Casper had, I believe, hurt. Was it Rios or one of the players right now? I can't remember off the top of my head. I apologize. But yes, they were shorthanded, but it didn't matter. Nashville, as you've seen across their season so far, they're very tough to beat. They'll draw with the best of them, but they're very tough to beat. But I would say after the first half, you know, the Union deserved to be up 1-0. And I think everybody agreed that it was a well-earned goal. Once again, it came off a set piece. So, you know, and we'll talk about Jack Elliott in a minute. But Jack Elliott, he pushes the ball forward. He ends up drawing a foul. Jamiro sends a pretty good free kick into the box. And Bedoya has, a nice veteran move. He kind of dodges the ball a bit, and it catches the Nashville defender off guard and hits his hand. And, I mean, probably one of the easiest handballs you're going to get to. A handball, an early teaser for what we're going to talk about after the Toronto match. But then Casper goes up. He steps up, and he leaves no doubt. Now that we've seen Casper do a couple penalty kicks, would you want anybody else to take these kicks?
I mean, absolutely not. I mean, considering we've seen other players at key points miss penalties this season, obviously we saw Montero step up and take that penalty in the CONCACAF Champions League, when ideally you'd probably wanted Casper to take it, considering he was going through that sort of run where the Union weren't playing well, but he was still scoring goals and getting goals. I'd quite like to have seen Casper take it against, obviously, Club America, because he has a good record on the penalty spot. Mm-hmm. Showed it again. I don't think, as you said, I don't think there was any other player on that pitch that you'd have rather had that penalty last night. Well, I'll try last night on Saturday than Casper.
Yeah, I mean, Gazdag obviously has had one penalty kick so far this year, and he took it well. We all know Sergio, I believe, was in the MLS's cup back, had that penalty kick that was awful. I don't think he's on the list for penalty kick takers. But no. Casper, the only thing I'm a little concerned by is, if I remember correctly, the last two penalty kicks he's had have been in the same exact spots. It's almost slightly to the left of the keeper, essentially down the middle. A very powerful kick, but not one that was necessarily far from the goalie. So I hope that if he does take another kick, that it's not the same spot. He picks a different location, because in my opinion, it's a bit predictable now what he may do if he continues that same strike. So that's my only concern with Kasper with this kick. But again, it was a good goal. Union played a complete match overall. Yeah. And I think you and I both agreed it was probably one of their best matches of the season. But you go and you claim second place for your own, which was huge. Now, anything in particular that from that match that you saw that really stood out to you besides their complete performance?
I think it was how solid they were at the back defensively, and I know the gym has been so there's a full of praise for both Glasnost and Elliott and that partnership that they formed this season. I know in the last couple of years that Mark McKenzie's has sort of been, was that ever present there? Like, it would either be Elliott and McKenzie or Glasnost and McKenzie. It was never those two playing together. So the fact that they've both come in into this starting role and essentially look like they've been playing together for years has been really impressive. And I think, obviously, there was a big hole to fill with McKenzie considering how good he was last year. And again, they've looked excellent. And the dependence that they have on them both, and we've seen in home games as well that they can depend on them two defensively to, you know, help them keep clean sheets, help them keep them in games. But obviously, we'll go on to discuss the Toronto game in a minute and perhaps the concerns we might have there going into the playoffs. But I mean, again, at home, again, they just look solid. They don't look like they're going to concede goals. Again, they've shown that against a good Nashville team. And yeah, it's just one of those, it just seems to be one of those partnerships that has continued to grow throughout the season, but it's looked like a partnership that has also been together for like 2, 3, 4 years, which is obviously very impressive to see.
Absolutely. Adam says, good evening. Hello, Adam. Thanks for joining along the show.
Cheers.
You know, one of the questions that we enter with Nashville, and you and I discussed this briefly on the previous episode, was you go to Minnesota and you have a pretty unfortunate outcome overall. And you're wondering, how can you recover again? And we said, Jim has had this team recover time and time again. You've had in the Atlanta game, the Chicago away match, after both Club America losses. You were hopeful that they would bounce back. And they did. They answered the call and they bounced back. From the defensive side of things, we saw many miscues against Minnesota, which led to the Union demise there. And we were just hoping, please, no mental mistakes. And I think Glesnes had one moment that was a bit concerning, but overall, the miscues were gone from Nashville. And that gave us a lot of optimism moving forward. But one player in particular that I want to highlight was Jack Elliott. Jack Elliott, offensively, I thought was really really someone that has picked up their game of late. So you see the goal, the free kick goal that he has, was it about 3 or 4 matches ago? If you remember the goal, the second Gazdag goal in Minnesota, Jack tries to sneak it over Tyler Miller into the net when he was off his line. That ends up being a corner kick. The corner kick leads to Bedoya's header to Gazdag. Boom, second goal. And then again against Nashville, you have him going up the pitch offensively, making a move, drawing a foul. The free kick then leads to the penalty kick. Boom, you have a goal. So Jack Elliott's offensive presence, I mean, yeah, you can compliment all the back line. We saw Kai's ability against Toronto, but we've always known Jack Elliott's a good defender, and he always puts himself in a good spot. But it seems that the past month and a half, he's kind of taken his offensive game to the next level.
Absolutely.
What can you say about your fellow, English player right there?
Obviously, it's great to see that he is taking more of initiative from a defensive position. I think that's one thing that's very unique about the Union, which you don't really see with many of the other MLS teams, is the fact that all four of their starting defenders are all threats in attack. We know how good Baizo is and Kai are getting into good positions, attacking the wing, putting it crosses into the box. Obviously, we know that Glesnes is a guy that likes to get the ball and run high up the pitch, likes to shoot from distance. I think Elliott's now growing into that part of the game a bit more. He's now starting to grow a bit more confident. And we've seen, I think he's probably the best player in that team at being able to pick up a ball and play a 40, 50-yard diagonal pass across the pitch or to play the ball into space and things like that. I think he's, as the season's gone on, again, I said, obviously, the partnership between him and Glesnes and the confidence they've had in each other has grown. But I think the confidence in his own ability has grown as well. I think, especially considering he spent much of his Union career either playing as the six, as the holding midfielder, or he's been in and out playing centre-back. different partners. And I think now he's actually found a consistent partner. He's now able to somewhat look more at him, like look more at his own game, what he can do to help the team more, which obviously we have seen in not just the recent weeks, but I think since probably, I think probably just after the Club America first game, I think we've seen a big increase in his attacking contributions in the games. And again, he's been a great, it's a great thing to see, because it's not just, I think that also helps and takes the pressure off the midfield when you know that your defenders can all, you know, come up and do something. You know, you, like as a player for like Bedoy, who isn't exactly, who's coming on a bit, but again, he's played really well the last couple of weeks. You know that you've got someone like Glesnes near you who can then just push out the pitch and allows you to perhaps take the pressure of you having to run the ball up the pitch and things like that. It's obviously very it's healthy for this team.
I think that's a great point. Producing offense from the back line is really beneficial, especially for the Union squad who don't have a true scoring playmaker. And Ali Bedoya mentioned this last night in his press conference, where he was very visibly pissed off at the result. You win and lose as a team with this particular Union squad, as we've seen for the last several years. You know, they don't have, like I said, they don't have that big playmaker. So having everybody contribute on every single level is crucial. And one player that I think a lot of Union players, or Union fans rather, miss is Harris Madunian. Harris was such an excellent passer. He's such great vision moving forward, and him playing at the back really allowed this offense to grow. And you saw, you know, signs of it throughout his time with us. But having Ellie and Glesnes now improving their offensive match does kind of help bring back some of that magic that Harris had. And you've seen it now a couple times with Elliot, especially in particular with Sergio Santos when he is healthy.
Yeah.
We've seen it multiple times where Elliot is able to feed him with a very well-placed pass, and that kind of starts the offense there. So I'm going to segue a bit into the next match, because, I mean, Nashville was a great match. We all know the great things. But the match we really want to discuss is Toronto. So I'll segue with Toronto, which started immediately with the goal that happened 37 seconds into the match, the second fastest Union goal in club history. I cannot remember the first one, I'm sorry, but it is the second fastest Union goal. Playing out the back, Dave, with your defensive backs, Glesnes crosses the pitch to Kai, who's wide open, basically. Kai sends it to Gazdag, who was also open, and then he finds Bedoya,
who's also open.
Who's also wide open. So I don't know what Toronto was doing, but played from the back, as we've just talked about. What were your thoughts on the goal there?
So obviously I didn't actually get to watch the game last night because I had to get up for work at the equivalent of 2:40 a.m. Eastern time. So again, I've been doing that all week. Luckily, I'm leaving. So tomorrow's late is my last shift. So
finally,
okay, yes. So get back to look at watching all the Union games and following everything. But again, it was obviously a great start, the perfect start, great goal, great team goal as well. You know, it's just the fact that the players were able to find these pockets of spaces, and Gazdag was able to manipulate the space to get in between the defenders and forcing defenders to make mistakes. And again, it was the good self-awareness and the good awareness of the position he was in to quickly turn and play the ball to Bedoya before a player could realise what's going on. I mean, again, I think that goal was perfect for Ali, considering, you know, he had really big struggles. I know we weren't the only ones that were discussing whether he should be in the starting team or whether he should be a bench role player from there onwards. Since the Club America game, I think he's probably benefited from this
re-energized team they have. Yeah.
I think there's less pressure. I think, there's been less pressure on this team to having to battle on two fronts. That's probably the reason why they look so drained during that period between the first and second Club America match, or between that second leg against Atlanta, or whatever. But again, it was just a perfect start. Bedoya kept up his very good form with that nice goal. Yep. And again, as I say, it was just a perfect start for a team that is continuously growing in confidence.
Well, Gazdag in particular, I mean, we've talked about this. Now, Jim has put out this you know, Christmas tree formation, the 4-3-2-1, for three matches now. After the Nashville match, he mentioned he actually thought they played well in the formation against Minnesota. Yes, the mental mistakes hurt them, but it wasn't the formation that caused the mental mistakes. It was just individual, uncharacteristic moments. So he went with the formation again against Nashville. It worked out great, as you know from the result. So he went with it again. And one thing we have questioned about in the past has been Gazdag's placement on this roster. Where is he best suited from? And it seems of late he found his form next to Jamiro as a second 10 behind Kasper. And so you want to see him continue his form. He had the two goals against Minnesota. He played fine against Nashville. And then again, he gets an assist against Toronto. So I'm hoping that this is kind of the start for Gazdag, because he mentioned his presser, and I think we talked about this briefly before. This game is much faster than he was used to across in Hungary. So yeah, it does take time. I mean, and I think you and I have both agreed we were questioning whether his contributions to the team was ever going to happen, if maybe he was just a bad signing. But I feel like the past three or four matches, he's been one of our better players.
Absolutely.
So it's great to see Daniel perform at that level. But moving on past that goal, one of the biggest issues they had was just keeping Toronto away from Matt Friis. And the turnovers were an issue. I thought they were sloppy at times throughout the match. You mentioned that it was one of the more suitable or probably one of the better away matches. Any particular reason why you noticed something particular from the highlights that you watched?
I think the fact they actually created chances, they actually had good, meaningful chances in the game. Where if you look at a lot of the road games they played recently, I mean, the Union have won one game on the road in 5 months and they're somehow in the top three of the MLS, which is incredible. I don't even know how that's even possible, the fact you can't win any road games, you're sort of in that position. And I just didn't watch the highlights. And again, I mean, I think Minnesota again was one of those games which was probably one of their better road performances, although they lost. But I mean, like, the fact that they were getting into very good positions and creating good chances throughout the game, really. Obviously, we know that Kasper hit the bar. Yep. He had another couple of good chances. I mean, they were creating chances throughout the game, whereas we've seen in game that some of their defeats and some of the draws where they've been lucky, like they've been lucky to even not have a goal or even have a shot on target. I mean, one game that I think we'll look at is a DC United game. They quite literally had scored an own goal when being battered, and they didn't actually do anything up from after that. I mean, okay. Do you know what I mean? So I think that's sort of one of the things that I'm looking at.
I think that's fair. I mean, I would have liked to seen them perform with more precision overall. I thought that after they scored that first goal, I thought Toronto controlled most of the first half. The Union did settle into the match a bit more as it went on, but overall, I think against a better squad, they probably would have been tied 1-1 by the end of the first half. And they probably would have lost that match yesterday if it was against a more a highly touted squad compared to Toronto, which is closer.
More able team.
Yeah, that's a better way to put it. More able team. So that was my concern. But I think you're right. You know, it's very hard to win on the road. And Jim alluded to this in his press conference. He mentioned it. This is the reason why we keep dropping points on the road. This is the reason. He just summarized it to, it's very hard to play on the road in the MLS. Right. And this is basically it. There's nothing more to it than that. The biggest concern, though, is that they keep dropping points. It's not like they're drawing. They're down 1-0, then they come back and it's 1-1, and that's it. Or maybe they blow one lead and then they give it up a point or a goal, and now it's 1-1. This has been a repetitive thing now with them. They get the lead on the road and they blow. I think Ali mentioned they've blown 7 points now in the past few road matches. That's my biggest concern, because eventually you will have to go on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
What's going to happen then?
I mean, I think that was my biggest concern. That was my biggest concern about this team.
Yeah,
is the fact that their road form's so poor, and again, they're going to have to play Nashville. They're going to have to play either Nashville or New England in this playoffs, but they might have to play both of them on the road in the playoffs, which again, As you said, they've won one game on the road in 5 months against FC Cincinnati, which are probably the worst team in the league, apart from maybe or joint worst team in the league with Toronto, and they've failed to beat both of those teams on the road, and it doesn't look great for you when you're on paper, especially if you can't beat those, if you can't really get 6 points out of six off those two teams.
Yeah.
Those are sort of the games that you look at, and they're sort of those gimme games. We saw them in Nashville, okay, they went 3-1 down. But Nashville, in the end, made it look like there wasn't really an issue. I think if you they came out the second half, all guns blazing, and absolutely thrashed. Absolutely thrashed Cincinnati, and they made it look like it wasn't even a game. I mean, the fact that scoring six goals on the road scoring six goals in the game is incredible. To score six goals on the road in a must-win game, it just shows just how good they are, really.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. So for the people who were watching live with us, you know, we were scoreboard watching like crazy. And the first half across a lot of the MLS matches was pretty wild to begin with. But if for those who didn't know, so Nashville took an early 2-0 lead against – I'm sorry, Cincinnati took an early 2-0 lead against Nashville. And everybody's like thinking, okay, the Union are up 1-0 within the first minute. Cincinnati's up 2-0 against Nashville. Everything's going to go perfectly. We're going to get 3 points. They're going to lose. We're going to climb the table and push ourselves even further. And then you just kind of saw it slowly. And that's why I titled this episode "That's So Union," because this reminded me of years past where something catastrophic happened. You just thought that's so Union again for this to happen. But as the match progressed, you saw Toronto get more and more chances. They got more into form with the match, and you see Nashville creeping up. It was 2-1 Cincinnati, and then Cincinnati jumped up 3-1. So you think, okay, it's fine. Since you know the attack has been halted, and that's it. By halftime, I think it was 3-3, and then by the end of the match, as Dave you mentioned, it was 6-3 Nashville. So everything that could have gone wrong in that scenario did. Fortunately for the Union, though, they were able to get the second goal. But before that second goal happened, the Union gave up two goals to Toronto. Succession.
Yeah.
The mental miscues came back to bite them again. The first goal, I'll let you describe the first goal because I feel like, you know, you mentioned it on our group chat, on our Twitter chat together.
I mean, the first goal, I don't know. Obviously, I didn't watch the game live, so I don't know. I feel like, were people blaming Elliott for both goals or?
No, they're blaming Kasper for the first goal.
First goal was on Kasper. You've either got to kick the ball out for a throw and you've got to kick it away, or just pass it back and then have Jack clear the ball. You can't try and flick it around someone 20 yards from goal, because that's just, again, it's stupid. It's ridiculous to put yourself in a difficult position. I know people look at it and go, oh, but if it comes off, he looks amazing. Okay, I don't give a fucking shit if he does look amazing, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to lose the ball and you're going to be out of position, because people are going to be trying to get onto that little flick around. I mean, you're going to pull out players out of position. The ball comes out to Elliott, and at that point, the guy's ready to come to closing down. The only thing Elliott can do is clear it. Gets closed down. Falls to, I think it was Jose Altidore.
Altidore, yep.
Good finish. 1-1. Nothing Freeze could do. Not much Elliott could do. He was pressured. Tried to clear the ball. Couldn't put it anywhere else but into the guy and hope it deflected anywhere. It fell perfectly. I think it was just one of those from the Kasper flick. It was just the sort of thing, a turn of events that just continued to go in Toronto's favor. Favorable deflection, not favorable block, into straight to the feet of Altidore in acres of space. And
it was funny because one of the people who were involved in this play was Jose Martinez, and I thought Jose Martinez had a couple rundowns defensively that were very impressive. The one to end the first half in general, it was like a 30 yard sprint to the end line or to the goal line, and he's able to kind of shimmy the ball out of bounds end of the first half, and he did it again in the second half, and I thought he played great. In particular, I thought he did well clearing the ball out, and there's an opportunity now where Kasper can do the same thing, and he just doesn't do it. He could have easily just kicked it forward to the right side of the field, and he chose not to. And Martinez at that point couldn't recover fast enough because I don't think he expected it. And as you mentioned, it kind of just snowballed from that. But it's just these mental miscues on the road that are just killing this team. And we've seen that at home a couple times, but I don't know what it is about being on the road. They get too careless. They get too cute. And it just seems like they're overthinking the most simplest of tasks. You have the ball 20 yards out. You're not in a good position. There's a defender on your hip. Clear it away. And it ends up being – it's unfortunate because Freese is – you need to help Freese as much as you can. Not that he's a bad keeper, but he still isn't a regular starter. He needs to have some protection overall, which is what I was concerned by from the first half. I thought they were allowing the pressure to come down the field too easily. And even you saw it on one of his saves. I think it was one of the kick saves he made towards the end of the first half. He was pretty pissed at the defense in front of him because they just marched down the field with no one stopping any sort of movement at all. So the first goal was frustrating, and it kind of goes back to the mental miscues. The second goal was a bit unfortunate. The ball gets crossed into the box. Jack Elliott, I mean, he stretched as far as he could, and it just unfortunately went into the own goal, and Freeze had no chance. I mean, did you have any issue with that goal? I mean, or was it just like a fluke?
No, I haven't got an issue. It's one of those things where, I mean, it's happened to me before. I've scored no goal like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
the ball's
coming across the goal, and it's sort of either you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you leave it, Altidore's right there, and he's going to score anyway. Mm-hmm. I think in those situations, you've literally just got to put out a foot and just either hope the ball bounces off you dodgily and it goes out for a corner or somehow goes the opposite direction. Or you just hope you somehow get the ball and your goalkeeper has a quick enough reaction to save it. Yeah. I think in that sort of situation, you have to go for the ball unless you hear a shout to leave it. Obviously, Jack probably didn't hear a shout to leave it. He had to get a foot in, end up in the back of the net. You can't really do anything about that. Can't really complain. Perhaps the only thing you could argue is that they got him behind the Union defence too easily to put him in that situation, maybe. It's probably the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I agree. And it sucked because it was so soon after that first Toronto goal. So it really just was, you know, you're leading, you're kind of on the fence the whole night, you're not sure if they're going to finally break through. They break through, and then boom, now you're losing. Within a couple minutes, the whole momentum changed dramatically. But fortunately, I think I agree with you, though. Overall, a fluke thing is the timing of it was really the worst part about it.
Yeah.
But moving forward, see, Sergio Santos finally is healthy again. I think he's cleared for about 45 minutes of play as of one of the press conferences of late. So he's not ready for full action, but he gets brought in into the match for Daniel, and he makes his presence felt. Kai Wagner, who had the start of the first goal early in the game, he comes in, has a perfect cross to Sergio, who's just wide open in the box.
Yeah.
The Toronto defense, was not really that strong within their box on those two goals. But Sergio puts just a well-placed header into the back of the net. And it was just great to see. It was great to see because of how important he was, or he was of late, and how important he is to this team moving forward.
Yeah.
What can you say about the goal from Sergio?
Obviously, it was a great ball by Wagner to actually get the ball in the position that allowed Sergio to attack it with so much ease. To actually find the right spot with him in acres of space was huge. It was a great header, obviously, as well, to direct it into that bottom corner. So we see with headers like so often, players either head over the bar, they head wide, or they head it straight to the goalkeeper. He managed to get enough of a torque on his head to manage to direct it into the far corner, which was obviously what you wanted. Overall, it was a great goal. Obviously, awful defending from Toronto, but I think at that point, the Union will take it. I know that Casper had a big chance at 1-0. I think it was almost 2-1, I think it was. Again, it was Kai who played the ball in on the ground, low cross towards the six-yard box. If he literally puts it anywhere, either side of the goalkeeper, it's a goal. He hit it straight at him. And you saw the frustration. He just absolutely hit it as hard as he could at the advertising but hoardings as soon as the ball went out of play for the goal kick.
Unfortunate. It's because you did, like you said right there, he was right in front of Westberg. I mean, literally maybe a yard in front of him, and he hits it right to his chest. No more than maybe 5 or 10 minutes later, I can't remember how long it was, the Toronto FC scores their first goal. So just think about how much momentum would have changed if he had put that away early on. And then his second opportunity to score, I don't blame him for going over the keeper. I think at that point you kind of have to. If the ball is an inch lower, then it goes in the net and he's a hero, so nobody's complaining about him. But of course, as you know from Twitter, people love roasting Casper.
Yeah.
So, he was put on blast on Twitter for both of those missed opportunities. And, you know, I'm not trying to start an issue here, but Ali did kind of highlight those moments too. He says, you have the ball, you should have cleared. He didn't say Casper's name, but he says, you know, when we had the ball that close to the box, we could have cleared it out to the side. When you had those two scoring chances, we should have done better with those scoring chances. So it's not Bedoya calling out Casper, but he is talking about those three moments that Casper had in the press conference, which I think is fair. I mean, those were chances you had to really make an impact on this match.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, you didn't do so.
Yeah. I think the second chance where he hit the crossbar was obviously the harder Chancellor too. I mean, maybe perhaps he had the time to bring it down and shoot across the goal, maybe. I think that could have potentially been something, or he could have.
Sergio was open too.
Yeah. Sergio was getting open. But I mean, again, it was sort of just one of those moments, isn't it? Just one of those things. It was perhaps it wasn't his night for Casper, and I think it sort of showed.
Yeah. Well, Casper has another chance, and I'm looking down at my phone because I'm looking at the standings right now. The Philadelphia Union did get a road point. Congratulations. But unfortunately, NYCFC moves up the table. And as we've already talked about, Nashville won against Cincinnati. So the standings are as follows. New England is, you know, the Supporters Shield champions, well above everybody. Nashville has 52 points. They are now in second place. The Philadelphia Union have 50 points. They are third place behind them by 2 points. And then NYCFC, 47 points. So things are going to get very interesting over these next two matches. The next match is against FC Cincinnati. So Sunday night, Cincinnati is a must.
Actually, quick question. We didn't get to discuss the penalty.
We didn't. You're right. I'm sorry. Let's go back real quick. So at the end of the match, Casper is given a ball in the box. Jamiro did a great job to find him in there. Casper gets a ball and shoots it at the net. The ball hits the back side right here. This is my left hand. I know it's reversed on the camera. This is the back side of Michael Bradley's hand. Michael Bradley then drops to the floor as if he was shot with a shotgun. And the Union go crazy. It's very obviously a handball. The referee does not think so. After about a minute or two on his headset, they say no VAR. It's a corner kick for the Union.
Yeah,
Twitter was irate. Dave, you actually didn't think it was a handball. So please go ahead.
So essentially, I know the reason it didn't go to VAR is because the referee told the video assistant referee that what he'd seen, and there was no need to check it. So essentially, the ball had hit Bradley's like stomach and then bounced into his arm. So essentially, it's already, because it's hit a body part and then gone into the arm, it's not a penalty, essentially, because you can't do anything about the arm, where the ball goes once it hits your body into your arm, because essentially that's out of your control. I mean, if it had directly hit Bradley on the arm and then the stomach, would have been a penalty. But I know Danny Higginbottom also agreed that it wasn't a penalty as well, that it hit another body part before hitting the arm. So essentially it was out of his control, which is why the penalty wasn't given.
I think you and Danny are probably the only two Union fans out there who agree with that call. But
yeah.
I just from watching it live, and I haven't watched it again since last night, so maybe I should give it another look because I do trust your opinion with that. But just seeing it live, it visibly stopped by his hand. Whether it hits his stomach or not, it very visibly gets stopped by his hand, which is why everybody was just – and Jim Curtin was irate.
I think, it's one of those things where if you haven't watched it back or if you're in the stadium, you don't get to see the highlights again. You're there vehemently shouting, it's a handball, it's a penalty, which I think is understandable. But, I mean, having watched the highlights and the thing with the MLS highlights on YouTube is they show the same thing like seven times. So I got to see seven different angles or seven different speeds of it. So I sort of got to the point where it wasn't a penalty because it hit another body part, like full hit in the arm, so it was out of his control of what was going on. I think, again, also, I know obviously you were discussing the playoff teams. One team we do need to look out for is Atlanta United. They've got a game in hand on everyone else and 46 points. They win the game in hand. Again, it's a winnable game. They got Toronto at home on Saturday night or Saturday evening. So again, that's a very winnable game for them. They could climb up onto 49 points. That's another team that could, climb above the Union. But as we obviously head into the FC Cincinnati game, I tweeted out earlier, Union win this game, doesn't mean Scott or any of the other teams below them do. They will be in the playoffs, doesn't matter what happens. And quite frankly, I think the fact that they've made the playoffs should put Jim Curtin in the MLS Coach of the Year conversation. I know he won't win it, but I think he should be in the conversation for it.
I think I understand what you're saying. I do, because history tells us that a CONCACAF Champions League team that makes a deep run should not be in the position the Union are in. I think out of the X amount of teams that we've seen on paper so far doing their run, what was it, two of them have made it into the playoffs. Most of them finished 7th, 8th, or 9th. And at the time that they lost against Club America, they were in 9th place. So they were kind of riding that decline at that time. Over the last month, that's changed dramatically. And for people giving Curtin a lot of grief for his substitutions, for his mental miscues that were seen on the field. I think you make a valid point. Jim has managed to get this team back on track to the level of soccer that we know that they can play. So I agree with you there. But you're right. If you want to go further down the table, NYCFC has 47 points. Orlando has 47 points. Atlanta has 46. And then DC United has 44. And even the Red Bulls have 43, and as is Montreal. Columbus has 41. So you have a handful of about six teams or so within 7 points of the Union. Yeah. If you lose these next two matches, you very well could be leapfrogged and be sixth or seventh place if everything else falls into place. I don't think that's mathematically possible. But the point being is you could drop significantly in the table. If you win on Saturday or Sunday night, as you mentioned, you push yourself further up. The team in particular that we have to worry about is NYCFC. So their next match is against Miami. That's on Saturday afternoon at 1:30 p.m. And fortunately, that is in Miami.
Yeah.
So if the Union win against FC Cincinnati and NYCFC loses their match, then we're 6 points ahead of them entering decision day.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter.
Do you think you will have an issue on Sunday night? Or should this just be a blowout for the Union?
I say it should be a blowout, but I think the Union they should win this game, and they have to win this game. There's no excuses for not winning this game. There isn't any reason why the Union shouldn't be winning this game or walking away, even if it's a 1-0 win or 2-1 win. I don't think this is the point of the season now where it doesn't matter how you win, you just have to win. It doesn't matter if it's a late scrappy goal, whatever, just win the game. So, I mean, again, people look at this, oh, it's FC Cincinnati, it could be a walkover, it could be this, it could be that. I think it's going to be a difficult game for the Union in terms of, again, it's a team that are fighting for contracts and fighting some pressing new GM. We've seen it in recent weeks. They caused Nashville problems last night. I know they ended up losing 6-3, but they went 2-0 up, 3-1 up. If the Union aren't careful, that could be them on Sunday.
I mean, yeah, they very well gave Nashville a scare. And across the league, people were like, maybe, FC Cincinnati should be a force to be reckoned with as the season closes. They're trying to play spoilers to the teams above them to just say, hey, if we're going to miss the playoffs, you're going to miss the playoffs too. And we've seen it time and time again in numerous sports across all different kinds of leagues. Some ways the ones who will pull out the upsets are the ones who have nothing to play for. In mathematically speaking, but they just want to play spoilers. The Union are heavy favorites, though, as of right now. I think not that heavy. Yeah, they are heavy. They're minus 320. Let me get my glasses on because I'm old as hell and I can't see. FC Cincinnati is at plus 650, and the Union are minus 320. You're not too often you see a team minus 320. The Union, rather, minus 320. But they are heavy favorites to win this match. A draw is plus 410. So I think everybody and their mothers has put the Union as the favorites for this match, and rightfully so. So let's kind of close up the night here then with some predictions. Halloween night, FC Cincinnati come to Super Park. What do you think the score is?
I'm going to go 3-1 Union. I think it'll be one of those games where it might be close for a while, and we have a couple of scares. We think it could be a while. It could be one of those nights where it's Chicago all over again. It's Montreal all over again. We've dominated, but, we can't find the back of the net. I think I'm feeling not confident. I think confident Union come away for 3 points.
Yeah, and on terms of the anytime goal scorer, Kasper Schibilko is minus 115. He's the only player in minus number right now in the betting lines. The next highest favored Union player to score is actually Corey Burke and Sergio Santos, both at plus 160.
Yeah, Burke's back, isn't he? Burke back for the game?
Burke, I think, should be back, yeah. Kasper might get a break. I know Jim has mentioned that briefly. One player I'm concerned about is Alejandro Bedoya. He comes up limping again at the end of Toronto match. Is that something to be concerned about forward? So we'll have to pay attention to his health. I know the press conference is tomorrow, so we'll probably learn more about Alejandro Bedoya's health at that point. But goal scorer, I mean, you say it's 3-1. Who do you think is going to put in the back of the net for the Union?
I think it depends who starts. I think if Sergio starts, I think Sergio will score a goal. I think his pace will cause him issues. I think if they had won last night, I think we'd probably be seeing the likes of McGlynn, Quinn Sullivan, Paxton Aaronson probably play. However, now the pressure is more on to win this game, not only to keep up pace with Nashville for the second place spot, to also wrap up the playoffs. I think that's going to be a big one, is to wrap up the playoffs. I think everyone will be like, oh, we need to keep up with Cincinnati. But I think right now the main focus is chalked up, because, I mean, I know New York Red Bulls may not win their game. I think the game in hands against Montreal. Whoever wins that, that could end up in the draw, and the Union would pretty much be there. But if one of those teams win, the Union and throw two ducks in the final two games, and they end up getting caught. And again, I think it's just focus on clinching that playoffs, and focus on whatever Nashville do afterwards.
Nashville plays Orlando on Sunday at 4:00. So we will know the outcome of the Nashville match before we even play on Sunday night.
Yeah.
And they're traveling to Orlando, who are fighting for a seeded spot as well, a high seeded spot in the East as well, as we talked about. So
I was going to say, the Union will also know whether they're in the playoffs tomorrow or not, essentially, as well, because Red Bulls play Montreal, who are both 7 points behind the Union. That game's ending a draw. I think the Union will clinch the playoffs based off head-to-head, won't they?
And also, if Nashville draws against Orlando and we win, I believe, even though we're tied at points at 53 each, I believe we'll then be back in second place, since we will have the extra win in hand. Yeah. So even if Nashville does earn a point, as long as they don't win, we can get second place back this coming weekend. So two outcomes are good for us, for the Philly fans. For the goal scorer, I would like to see Daniel score another one, but I'm going to go Jamiro as my goal scorer for this weekend. Plus 230. I'm going to put a small bet on it now. Might as well do it live for it. Put my money where my mouth is. So, Jamiro, I think it's going to be 2-0. 2-0 win. A round of applause for Harris Madunian as he returns to Philly. Candy for all the kids, and call it a night. But any last thoughts before we hit our sponsors?
No, I think the next time we'll be doing our show, we'll be obviously looking up towards the season clincher against NYCFC. I think it could potentially be a show for us to potentially do like our own personal end of season awards, maybe. Who do we think was the player of the year?
I like that.
Things like that. Goal of the year, maybe. I know obviously we've got the playoffs coming up. But you know, we'll do it like the NFL does it, where we base our awards on the regular season. The playoffs don't actually matter.
I like it. Playoffs don't matter, nothing matters.
No.
Go Union. Let's do
matter, but obviously with the more the NFL seems to only care about what you do in the actual regular season for the awards, where they keep it fair for everyone, but you know, whoever the quarterback that makes a Super Bowl or gets near the Super Bowl is gonna win the MVP. So
of course. That's how it always is. Playoffs, I know. Anyway, let's get to our sponsors, wrap up the show. Both of us need to get some sleep. Manscaped, 20% off plus free shipping with the Manscaped.com. Check it out. A shave. Next up is Odds Jam. Odds Jam is the number one software platform for sportsbook bandits. They use an arbitrage calculator to so that we never lose a bet. So please sign up at oddsjam.com via AAT Birds. Another gambling one we have is Statement Games. StatementGames.com is a new fun way to fantasy sports entertainment. You can win gift cards and prizes, and it's free to sign up at StatementGames.com. Our newest sponsor is Lotterain Watches. Lotterain.com has an awesome selection of watches for the upcoming holiday season, so please check it out and use the AATBirds promo code for 10% off at checkout. And last but not least, we have the Across the Pitch gear at the AAT Sports Network shop. You can get t-shirts, you can get cups, you can get mugs. There's all different kinds of cool things. You know, I haven't worn this shirt this season so far, but this is one of my favorite Union shirts. This is not from our store. This is just one I like. So there's another one. If you want to expand your Union wardrobe like I have over the last couple of years, please check out the shop below for all of our network products. And that's it. As Dave has mentioned already, FC Cincinnati on Sunday. We'll come back next week to talk NYCFC, a little regular season awards. And then, Dave, we're almost done with Across the Pitch for this season. So we'll end it on a good note. Right. And
depends how far we get in the playoffs. Who knows? True. We could be doing it for another month. If they do one, they make a run in the playoffs.
How about this? If they make the MLS Cup, we do a live show while we watch the game.
God, Jeremy. There'll be plenty of emotions there.
Dave's gonna start crying. I'm gonna start punching a wall if they lose. It's gonna be mayhem.
It's just Philadelphia.
All right, guys, have a good night.
Cheers, guys. Enjoy your night. Dude.